welcome to Minute 38 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
And joining us once again today on this lovely Wednesday is Jim O'Kane of the Rocketeer Minute and the Apollo 13 Minute. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks for having me on. I keep trying to escape, but they keep bringing me back.
You should be happy that we've had guests that were locked in Tom's basement all week. So
my gosh,
you got away with that one.
Well, I'm sitting down with a cup of tea, and so we'll have a cup of tea with Colin and Henley. Or Henley's not that fond of it though.
No,
right. Minute 38 starts with Blythe finishing his introduction of himself, and it ends with him requesting a camera. Now, we discussed this the other day, and I find it really, really interesting. He introduced himself, and he says, my name is Blythe. He doesn't say, my name is Colin Blythe. My name's Blythe. You know, I think most of us, if we were to introduce ourselves to someone, we would actually introduce them by using our first name. You know, I wouldn't. I'm trying to think of a situation where I've been in where I automatically would introduce myself using my last name.
Well, if you were on His Majesty's Secret Service at the time, maybe.
You'd say 007. I don't know. He didn't say his name is Blofeld. His name is not Blofeld.
No, well, he could have gone, my name is Blythe, Colin Blythe.
He could have, but he didn't. Oh, you mean he was cut off?
Yeah.
No, but then Henley responds also, my name's Henley. You know, he goes, my name is Blythe, and he goes, Henley. And like, at least they're not saying ranks. You know, at least he's not saying, I'm Captain Blythe and I'm Major Henley, you know, or whatever. And obviously, those aren't the ranks. But it's just interesting that's the way they introduce themselves here. Because I'm sure if you would have met Danny or Willie, they would have said, I'm Danny or I'm Willie. They wouldn't have said, they wouldn't have used their last names. So maybe this is just the way that they wrote it in the script. So they decided to do it. But it just sounds less authentic doing it this way.
It does sound really awkward. I don't think I've ever introduced myself by my last name alone.
Exactly. Because, again, if you were to say Mr. Doctor, you know, if you had some sort of title beforehand, then, okay, you would say your last name. But in this situation, it just doesn't seem right. But I don't know.
Maybe he's hoping for that single name thing like Madonna or Prince. I don't know if
it could be. Now we understand from the man who we presume is named Hiltz. Okay, we've discussed the fact that, you know, he's walking around with a bag that says V. Hiltz. So it's possible that he just found the bag and told everyone that that's his name. You know, that he's really not Hiltz. And also he doesn't like people calling him Virgil. So maybe that could be it also. Maybe Colin doesn't like to be called Colin. Maybe Henley doesn't like being called Bob. It's possible. You know, maybe that's why they're in a room together. These are two guys who don't like using their first names. So let's put them in a room together. Who knows? Well, actually, we'll never know. It's, you know, it's all fun to think about and trying to figure out. So then at the time that Blythe is introducing himself, Henley starts checking out a camera that the that's on the
binoculars.
A binocular. Sorry, binoculars. And then they enter a very awkward, strange conversation about the difference between bird hunting and watching. You know, which I think is basically just once again trying to show the differences between the way Americans think about things and Brits. You know, Brits apparently they prefer to sit and just watch birds as opposed to Americans who would prefer to just shoot it and have it for dinner.
To me, that conversation harkens back to Ives and Hiltz in the cooler. When Hiltz says, I ride bikes, and Ives goes, you know, gets excited going bicycles, and Hiltz goes, no, motorcycles. It's the same kind of dynamic we're trying to establish between the characters, specifically the Americans and the Brits / Scots here. At least that's how I take it.
No question about that. You're right.
Yeah, and we finally get the American flight jacket there, or not? He's an American. He's wearing a flight jacket. It could be RAF, but he's Henley, as he walks back to the top bunk. You can see his leather jacket there laying out. So
right, he was carrying it also when he first came into the camp. That was the only thing he was carrying. And when a few weeks ago, when they thought he was stealing tools from the truck. So he was also carrying it. That was something that that's basically, you know, when we walk into the room and you see that his jacket is already yesterday, in, when we were discussing this yesterday, so his jacket is already on the bed, which already established that he was been in the room, you know, and put things in there. Yeah, so we get to see that jacket. But once again, just before we get to the jacket, so during the conversation about the birds with the hunting and watching, so Colin actually gives some very important information here that we can use for later in the movie, where he says that he enjoys watching and drawing birds. So, you know, this is a little bit of foreshadowing for later on, you know, once we find out what his occupation is, that, okay, it's also very important that he's someone who's able to draw. And he can draw birds, too.
It's foreshadowing for 3 minutes later in the movie.
When there's a scene where Henley brings the German wallet, and he shows him all the things. So he's drawn a picture of some sort of bird, you know, that he's teaching everyone about the bird.
Oh, that scene. You know, okay.
That's what I'm referring to. Yeah.
It's interesting how he's following this this almost ritualistic making of the tea, which I think is trying to show a bit of Blythe's character, that he is not, you know, he's not one of the commandos. He's not a military guy. It's more like this is what he'd do in civilian life. He'd come home after a day of work and he'd make himself a pot of tea and sit down and listen to the radio or something. But this is all part of his life to keep himself, you know, civilized. This is where he is. And no matter what's going on, he's going to have his nightly cup of tea.
Yeah. And he basically does it blindly while they're still having their conversation. You know, he doesn't stop, you know, fixing his tea and playing with the pots and the cups and everything. You know, he continues the conversation because this is obviously something he's done every single night or a few times during the day, you know, over the course of however long he's been in captivity.
Yeah, these rituals help keep him sane.
Yes.
And so he focuses on all of that.
Yeah, and the fact that we all know that Donald Pleasence himself was a POW, I'm sure that added a lot to his performance here. By maybe himself was. I mean, I know he was a hard liquor drinker, but maybe he used to drink tea also. Maybe that was something that he did. Maybe that's something he brought to the character from himself.
And he was not like he wasn't exactly a warrior. He was, I'm sure you've talked about this before, but he was a conscientious objector until the bombing of London, and then he changed his mind and said, "I have to do something," and he went in. He didn't take a battle role. He was a radio man. He was, you know, he didn't carry a rifle, but this may have shown as parts of his personality while he was a POW. Maybe this is what he did to keep his sanity. Just went through some rituals.
It could be. Right, and then they continue a discussion about tea. I enjoy listening to Henley's response. He basically says, I've only had tea once when I was in the hospital, implying that this is some sort of medicine. Because as we all know, Brits take their tea a little more seriously than Americans do. Maybe today it's a little different because Americans, you know, when you talk about tea time and stuff like that, but Americans nowadays probably outdo the Brits with the types of tea they make.
That's true,
the different varieties. You know, you can walk into a store, at least, you know, when you don't have COVID, and, you know, and you have to actually decide what brand or what flavor tea you want.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, I mean, Henley's reaction to it is, it reminds me of what my son used to say about if he was ever at home as an adult and he saw and a TV was on and The Price is Right was playing, he said he'd always start feeling vaguely ill because when he was a kid, staying home and watching The Price is Right was what you did when you were sick. You'd sit, and so he just said he'd feel like sick to his stomach watching The Price is Right because that's how he usually felt watching it.
I can empathize with that.
Yeah.
There were a lot of TV game shows that I only got to watch when I was homesick as a kid in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
They get a little woozy when Bob Barker shows up. And it's we had talked about this offline, but the thing about tea is it being a very British, you know, it's kind of a symbol of empire that, you know, we got tea from Ceylon and what is now Sri Lanka, getting it from around the world. The idea of having tea with sugar and milk, you're combining products of India, Jamaica, and the home country of Britain. It's kind of a massive imperial world, you know, symbol. But a lot of other countries didn't look at tea that way. They looked at it as something as an antiseptic, as something you'd, you know, like you said, like Hanley was saying, that you drink it when you're in a hospital, you drink it when you're sick. There were, I was reading about a famous story about Belgian refugees when they were being brought to England during the 1914, right, during the beginning of World War I. A lot of them were given tea in the refugee centers, and they would throw it on the ground because they were like, "Are you trying to kill us? This is something. This is what you drink when you have, you know, typhus or something. You're trying to kill the germs inside of you. It's not something that you drink for pleasure or for refreshment." I guess
very interesting.
Hanley had that same reaction,
right? I mean, I personally am not. I don't drink hot drinks. So tea is something that I will only drink when I'm feeling under the weather and, you know, need something to perk me up. I completely can agree with that sentiment. You know,
yeah,
tea for me is you're sick. Don't do it otherwise.
I'm that way with coffee. I simply can't drink coffee. I don't think I've ever had more than like two or three sips of it. Coffee makes me violently ill, which is a shame because coffee is one of those universal drinks that you can get anywhere. You can go into like you can go to Goodyear Tire and be sitting down ordering, you know, spare tires or something like that, and say, "Would you like some coffee? There's plenty of coffee." It's like, "No, I don't drink that."
Yeah, I don't drink coffee either. Never touched it. As you said, I've maybe had a few sips here and there, and it's never been to my liking. And I just, you know, people say to me, "How do you get up so early?" I get up at 5:30 in the morning to go to work, and like, "How do you get up every morning so early? Do you have a cup of coffee?" I'm like, "I don't drink coffee." And like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And
my wife is the opposite way. She runs on coffee, and I make her coffee every morning. I don't drink it, but you know, it's like I know how to. I can make coffee in my sleep, even though it doesn't. I don't drink it.
This has been the biggest problem me and my wife have had during COVID, and us both home all day. Is our coffee pot only makes so much coffee? We are both very much so run on coffee, and you know, in terms of tea, I drank a lot of sweet tea when I lived in the South. But that's a little different ball game than what they're dealing with, you know, the British high tea.
Right. I mean, I only drank tea when I was in the Army, and that was the only thing they gave us. You know, I for a few days I managed just to have a little bit of water, and then after a while I just broke down and would drink tea. So I only drink tea that's like very, very light tea with tons and tons of sugar. So, which is also why I don't drink it.
I used to work for a British aircraft company, and I'd go over to the UK, and they have tea there. I've been decaffeinated for 2 years, but back in the day, I used to drink something called PG Tips, which was a British tea. And after about two cups of that, you can see through walls. I mean, there's so much caffeine in it. The whole world starts vibrating because your blood pressure is like, it sounds like a really good bowling score. It's just kind of, it's mind boggling how much caffeine they can stuff in one little bag of tea. I'm just thinking about it now. I'm getting itchy thinking about what that stuff would do to you. But, you know, they drink it there like they're bathing in it. And it's an amazing culture that runs on that stuff.
Yeah, no question about that. The minute continues, and you know, you get to see Hanley standing next to one of the shelves, and you can make out a few things on there because. And then Colin says to him, "Where's your kit?" Meaning, you got nothing with you. You know, you have a jacket. Where's all your stuff? So he gives some sort of excuse as to why he doesn't have it. He says that most of it is confiscated in the last shakedown. But I think that that's just a line. He seems like the person who just walks around with what he's got on his, you know, his shirt on his back. He it reminds me, I was thinking to myself, okay, is he Jack Reacher? You know, someone who just walks around with nothing. But Jack Reacher actually has a ATM card. I think that's the only difference between the two of them.
I was always wondering, where are they all shaving? Because they all seem to have really great razors. These they have nice, close, you know, barber shaves almost. And nobody ever has so much as a 5 o'clock shadow.
I think John Sturgis dealt with that. Actually, I in one of the documentaries that I saw about the movie where they were meeting with various people in the town of where the movie was shot, they actually went into the barbershop. And there were numerous actors that every day would, at the end of filming, would go to the barbershop to get a trim and a shave. Wow. So, I mean, that's what happened in real life to these actors. But, you know, in the camp itself, I don't know how you can really explain that. Because, I mean, if you look on the shelf, he has what seems like a shaving brush, possibly a razor, maybe toothpaste. He puts his hat there. I'm assuming if he has toothpaste, he has a toothbrush.
That's like the four things, yeah.
Exactly. There's not much else there. And then he takes out his prized possession. You know, he goes over to his jacket and pulls out a Swiss Army knife. And my first thought was, did they really have Swiss Army knives back in World War II? So I actually did a little bit of research on it, and I was really surprised to see that Swiss Army knives came around in the 1890s. That's when they first created them. Even though in Moby Dick by Melville, it's actually one of the characters is described as having a multi-use pocket knife.
Hmm.
And basically, he said that he had, it says that he had a pocket knife that contained not only blades of various sizes, but also screwdrivers, corkscrews, tweezers, awls, pens, rulers, nail filers, and countersinkers. Which shocked me that, you know, Melville, who wrote the book in 1851, that they had something like that back then. But I guess it wasn't Victorinox.
So once he pulls out this multi-tool, Colin asks him if he's the scrounger, which seems like an utterly ridiculous question to me.
Well, because a minute ago they were in a room next to each other.
Yeah,
right. Literally 2 minutes ago, Colin was one person away as Roger introduced himself and asked if he was the scrounger. And I went back and looked. Colin is looking right at them when Roger brings it up. So I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you asking if he's the scrounger? You know he's the scrounger.
Yeah.
I think this is just...
And the other thing about it is you would think that Colin, given the job that he has, he would be somewhat detail-oriented. I don't, you know, it seems like he'd be the detail guy.
He's detail-oriented when looking at documents.
Yes.
Not necessarily at looking at, well, also we know that his eyesight is going, so maybe he, you know, maybe it's already starting to fade a little bit. You know, he doesn't recognize the same person that was just two feet away from him. So that could also be foreshadowing here. But I think it's just a plot device in the script to remind us that he's the scrounger. I don't think it's something that... I don't think we could read into it more than that. You know, and I love his first, you know, he says, oh, you're the scrounger. And then he goes, I need a camera.
Yes.
And that's basically how the minute ends. Do either of you have anything else to say about this minute?
I keep picturing if this had been like, you know, some kind of a Pulp Fiction thing, it would have, you're the scrounger, and then it would have been a freeze frame, and they would have put like a comic book outline on it going into a Dutch angle, and it would say the scrounger in, you know, oversized letters.
Well, we've discussed in the past that this is one of Tarantino's favorite movies,
yeah.
Which is why in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you know, he does have the scene. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, in a future Tarantino movie, he does something like that.
True, yeah. Wow.
You know, have the you know, the typical Tarantino type music, you know, and then, you know, turning it all into a comic book hero, comic book caricature, and then, you know, saying Donald Pleasance. Oh, no, sorry. Donald Pleasance as the forger. And then,
yeah.
And then James Gardner as the scrounger.
Yeah. I really am impressed just in this final moments of the minute. I am impressed by the laundry service, because anybody can keep – I mean, he's been in a prison camp for 2 or 3 years, and he has an immaculate white turtleneck. That is just – How much Tide would you need to get that, you know, that OxyClean look? It's an amazingly white turtleneck that Henley has.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the whole conversation that we've had numerous times here. Is that, I mean, come on, he's got one uniform. it's not just that he's able to keep the turtleneck so white. It's that his uniform is also spick and span. I mean, you would think that any of us, if we were walking around for 1 or 2 years or even just a few months with the same clothes, especially when you're digging tunnels.
Yeah, maybe we shot down with a Dakota in a Dakota that was full of uniforms. And he's just like, oh, good, a 44 long, this is me. I'm bringing this with me. And wandering through with a suit bag all the way through the war.
Well, when you listen to the rest of the earlier episodes, you'll have heard that some of the strange things that we found that some of the characters are carrying around. You know, there's a character carrying around a guitar. There's yes. someone carrying around a trombone. There's someone carrying around what looks like an accordion. So we know that there should be a band in the camp, but they never really show it.
Well, the 4th of July is coming, so we'll see.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, do either of you have anything else to say about this minute?
I'm good.
Good here.
All right. So, Jim, why don't you tell everyone once again where they can find you?
Well, we're finishing up as we are recording this, or as we are playing this. If you spin over to thebestminutes.com, you can listen into the finish of our 2 hour and 50 minute long movie called.
That's so short.
Yeah,
that's
it is.
That's a short
it
movie.
Is. It is. It's almost like the Reader's Digest version of this. So we're it's based on the William Wyler movie, The Best Years of Our Lives from 1946. So if you like movies about war, well, you missed the war in our movie because it just finished in 1946. But check that out. It's at thebestminutes.com or on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn, wherever you pick up your podcast. You can probably find ours, The Best Minutes Podcast.
All right, and you can find us at our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. You can also visit us and talk about anything that we've been discussing on our Facebook group for The Cooler. You can send us an email, thegreatminute@gmail.com, and you can also find us on Twitter at greatescapemxm. So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.